Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross, Colleen O'Brien, Chris Sullivan. President Trump says, yes, he pretty much fired former Defense Secretary James Mattis, who resigned last year. In his resignation letter, Mattis criticized the president's approach to our various alliances, and the president replaced him 2 months before he intended to leave, saying this.
I wish him well. I hope he does well. But as you know, President Obama fired him, and essentially so did I. I want results.
Now, we follow the Twitter feed of CBS military analyst and retired Army Major Mike Lyons, and you have had a few things to say about this, Mike. What did you think of the firing, and did Mattis deserve it?
No, Dave, I don't think he did deserve it, and I don't think the president fired him, frankly. Mattis decides to resign based on a decision that was made by the president that he's allowed to make, and submits this document that the president didn't read the first time because he came out with praise when he initially was leaving, but then when he took another look at it, recognized that he was highly critical of him. So the president decides to change and says he's leaving in 3 days. I don't think the president can turn around and say that he's fired him. He can't. He can do what he wants at some level, but he's now put U.S. civil and military relations, I think, at the lowest points it's been since perhaps Vietnam. Even go back to 1950s with the executive branch with Harry Truman and Douglas MacArthur. And this was the risk of hiring a guy like James Mattis to be the Secretary of Defense, having him leave the job this way.
Douglas MacArthur, who made, of course, this famous speech.
That old soldiers never die. They just fade away.
Chris Truman was worried that he was going to run for president. You think Mattis should make a similar speech, should actually take this more public than he already has?
I don't think he will. He's truly a soldier and a Marine at heart for his entire career, and I think he recognizes that this point in time in history, that this is a very fractious point, and I don't think he'll do that. And what happened back then was the Democrats actually controlled the House. They allowed MacArthur to make that speech really as a stick in the eye to Harry Truman, who fired the general at the point. So I don't see, unless you see the House Armed Services Committee, which is controlled by Democrats now, invite him to speak, you could have something that we haven't seen since that time.
Yeah, well, I mean, there might be some motivation for them to do exactly that. So let's ask, I mean, we're talking politics. I'm more concerned about what's best for the country, as I think you are. What should happen as a result of this? Is there some message we should be taking from Mattis's quitting that we haven't taken to heart yet?
Well, I think a couple of things. First of all, both sides of the aisle, the president in particular, has got to stop politicizing the military. He's got to stop saying things like my generals, or he's got to stop making political speeches in front of troops claiming that those troops are on his side. And that's kind of the implied mission and the implied task. And every time he makes one of those speeches. Now, you can argue about troops getting their campaign material signed and the like, and that probably has to be toned down as well. So the president has got to have a greater responsibility. But then on the other side of the coin, I think the retired general officers have got to roll back their political feelings as well, because they think that they're speaking for the troops. So that's implied when they talk as well. You've got McChrystal over the weekend calling the president immoral. The president's out of general officers. You know, he started this whole campaign and he started this administration with a whole stable of them, and now there's none left. And I think that he needs to, review that relationship, number one. But number two, the generals have got to peel back and recognize that when they take that, they make a political comment, the halo comes off and the president's going to go after him. It's just not good for the country.
Elizabeth Warren, senator who's running for president, made a comment on along these lines, saying that she is in agreement with withdrawing the troops from Afghanistan and Syria, as Trump is doing, but that there's no plan here. There's no coherent policy. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I think when the president says we're now going to take 4 months to do this, it's still, to me, all a bunch of smoke and mirrors, and I'll tell you why. For 2,500 troops, they could be literally out of there in 3 days if they had to be. It's not like we're taking the 1st Armored Division out of Iraq like Barack Obama did back 2011. This is not the same thing. So the plan is this. We're leaving Syria. We're going to leave the country to its leaders there, and we're going to let things go the way They've always have been. So I don't know what kind of plan we need. You want to talk about a strategy for the Middle East? Perhaps maybe that's, we're inside of Iraq. We're doing other things. It's just not communicated. You've got a transactional president that doesn't necessarily look well over the horizon. I think it's a problem more in the South Pacific and in the South China Sea, where we don't have a strategy. But for right now, I think the president's instinct is right about taking troops out of Syria. And frankly, from a military perspective, they could be out of there in 3 days.
Okay. Well, then that's good. So there are you don't foresee any security consequences to taking troops out of Syria and Afghanistan?
I don't see them coming out of Syria, no. 2,500 troops are not keeping ISIS from growing inside of Syria. Uh-huh. Something that the Iraqi government nor the Syrian government can take care of in small pockets. They don't threaten the United States. I think Afghanistan's different. I do think that situation is not like removing troops that are actively in the battle. They're embedded with the Afghan military, and it's still not to the point where the leaders on the ground there feel that the Afghan government can take control of it. I do think we're coming out at some point. The president might decide we're all coming out. If that's the case, that situation could revert back to what the situation was in the 1990s and the Taliban taking over and Afghanistan going further back in time.
CBS military analyst and retired Army Major Mike Lyons. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Steve.
The 2019 legislative session gets underway in a little over a week in Olympia. Issues include mental health, gun control, clean energy, and affordable housing. But you can also expect to hear more on car tab relief, opioids, and human composting, which I find especially intriguing, although I'm sure that goes on anyway. Kyra's Hannah Scott is here with a look at some of those early proposals. So what's on the top of your list?
There's so many on the top of my list, but we're going to start with human composting because, as you said, it's interesting, and it's a bill that's been getting a lot of attention in recent days. It would see Washington State become the first to legalize human composting if it passes. Now, it's being introduced by Democratic Senator Jamie Peterson and would change state law, which right now only allows for cremation and traditional burial, to allow now for recomposition. Now, what that is a process that converts human remains into soil. It would, then you can go in a tree or...
This is not a Cedar Grove thing, is it?
No, no, it's okay. Not. It would also legalize something called alkaline hydrolysis. This is alternatively known as another process to cremation called...
Somebody says this is literally a process to turn you into compost so that you can fertilize a plant.
Yeah, that's not the primary goal. It's another option
that does happen anyway, right? After, even with a regular coffin, over time.
But this is a very different.
Unless you're one of those hermetically sealed super stainless steel coffins.
Here's what makes this different: it's cheaper, it's better for the environment, and it's different. It's different. So, and again, also the bill
and that was not allowed before.
No, it's not allowed anywhere. Not in our country.
Really?
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, it's a new process.
So this would just lay you right in the ground then?
You could be done. That could be done. It would give your remains back to your family, and then they could, in theory, do that with you.
Anywhere they want?
There are going to be some rules that have to be established because of this, okay. And that would be all worked out in this legislation. But a recent WSU study did find that this recomposition process is safe and, as I said, also cheaper, better for the environment. Again, I want to point out alkaline hydrolysis would also become an option under this plan, and that is the flameless cremation or water cremation.
Okay.
So there's that. Also, lots of gun proposals already in the hopper, from a ban on high-capacity magazines and ghost guns to allowing minors to be the subject of extreme risk protection orders, as well as suspending firearm rights for 5 years for anybody who's caught violating an ERPO for the second time. Now, on the gun rights side, we've also got some early proposals, including a proposal from Representative Jim Walz, Republican, who wants to allow school districts to adopt policies that allow for arming teachers and other school staff who go through firearms training equivalent to what cops have to go through. He is also proposing bills that would bar the Department of Licensing from keeping any new records on pistol purchases and transfers, and asking that they destroy all that they have on file. That's part of the background check stuff that we've talked about before. They currently, DOL has those existing.
That wouldn't interfere the police from tracking down crime guns, though, would it?
It should not. No, this has to. This has to do with universal background checks and the records that the DOL keeps. Okay. I don't know what how likely this bill is to pass, but that's what he's proposing. Also, there's a constitutional amendment on the books that are on the proposals that would allow for planning for continuity of government in the case of disaster, which includes everything from earthquakes to terror attacks or nuclear attack. This is a very involved bill. I've kind of glanced through it. This, I believe, has to do with that really old law that we have on the books that prevents us from doing certain planning for attacks and also would allow for continuity of government. So that would be a constitutional amendment. There's also an accompanying bill. So that should be an interesting thing to listen to when it gets a hearing. We've also got some pot proposals on the books. One would bar any new pot shops from being located within 1,000 feet of schools, bus stops, and other places that kids are. That's further than the current regulation. Another bill would allow for students at K-12 schools who have the authorization to use medical marijuana to do so on campus and on school buses. That's been an issue. It's
to not, smoke it?
To however it is they're supposed to take it. I don't think that they...
You can give out aspirin, right? A nurse can give out aspirin if necessary. So if it's a pill, I suppose that wouldn't be controversial.
Yeah, there's only certain stuff that I think
you're
the school
sit in
nurse
the nurse's
can
office
get,
and
toke
it.
Out. Yeah, right. No, I don't think that's yet. You have to have the medical authorization. Your parents have to give the okay. But it's some students need it for various reasons, seizures, other things. But currently, they can't use that on school campus. Car tab relief and Sound Transit will again be hot topics. I think we can expect car tab relief proposals from both parties. But so far, the only one out there is from longtime Sound Transit critic Steve O'Bann. He's got the same one that he proposed previously. It would basically revert the vehicle valuation system to Kelley Blue Book. It also, though, cuts the ST3 tax by more than half, and that's a huge deal. And then it would also give refunds. He's also, again, introducing a proposal that would make Sound Transit Board directly elected.
Been so frustrated in what we've seen for all the money that's been authorized to Sound Transit, and I don't expect them to be any more accountable and frugal than we've seen over the last some 25 years. So my chief bill would require that each board member be directly elected by the people. And I believe I'll have Democratic support for this bill for the first time.
So, yeah, and that is the first time. I asked him again later, and he said, yep, he wouldn't tell me who, but he said he has some Democratic support. So we'll see how that plays out.
I'm just curious on this. Has anybody addressed the idea that if you make a transit board elected officials, they could be lobbied, for example, by property owners to locate stations in certain places or by, you know, people who run corporations and things like that?
Well, if you think about it, there are already elected people that are being lobbied right now. Mm-hmm. They're elected. Primarily, all of them are mayors or county executives or county, you know, on the county boards and things like that. They are elected, but they're just not elected to this board.
Right.
So technically, they are probably already being lobbied.
Mayors are higher profile politicians. A transit board member is like the Snohomish, what is it, the Puget Sound Regional, whatever it
council
is.
Council that has 87 members.
Exactly. Yeah, nobody knows who they are. So those elections would be voted in by a tiny portion of the voters who would even know who they are.
No, and I think his overall goal here is Sound Transit Board specifically, and Dow Constantine are his pretty consistent targets with this. And, you know, he makes good arguments, but there are arguments on both sides. He's also got a couple of more bills. One is one I believe he brought up before that would require that if Sound Transit goes over budget in any way on the ST3 projects, that it has to go back to a public vote before you can give them any more money. And then another one that is new would also have to do with a public vote.
And so this bill would allow the people through the initiative process to pull that county out of ST3. So they wouldn't have to keep paying those monies. They would only finish paying for those projects that were begun in their county and for the operation of those projects. But when it comes to light rail, which is the subject of the ST3 and the $54 billion, if the people had the power, I know Pierce County would exercise that right, and they would pull out if given the chance. And so I want to give the people through the initiative process that right.
I know Sully's dying to weigh in on this.
Well, it's just one of those things that, you know, I've talked to Peter Rogoff, the head of South Transit, about these years. Like, that's why it's a tri-county thing. It's all or nothing. So if this were to happen, basically the house of cards at Sound Transit would fall. Yeah. For ST3, but I don't know if there's
if Tacoma pulled out? No, if Tacoma pulled out.
No, Pierce County pulled out.
If Pierce County pulls out, property values will collapse.
Right, but by law, the way that the ST is written, the whole charter, it's a all in or no one's in.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how that passes constitutional.
And he believed it was constitutional. So we'll see.
I think they should. I think they should. Let any candidate who wants to opt out, opt out. As long as they know the consequences, Tacoma would be a backwater. But, you know, if they don't want to be part of the economic engine, that's their right. I mean, a lot of people are sick and tired of growth. I get it.
By the way, handicap that, considering the makeup of the legislature, Hannah. Does this even get a hearing?
No, and I don't know that those two get a hearing. And I asked them that. And I asked them, why are you even bringing these up? Some of these didn't even pass when the Republicans had control of the Senate. And he said it's important to him to keep it up and keep it out there because sooner or later it's going to be out there so long that it's going to cause somebody to change their mind. So we'll see how that goes. I want to throw out really quick, too, tampon taxes back on there, exemptions for the tampon tax, exemption for adult diapers, and making Governor Inslee's office pay back for the budget shortfall of the state patrol for out-of-town campaign visits.
There's going to be a lot of that going on, it sounds like.
So we'll see. It'll be an interesting session. I'll keep you posted.
Thank you, Hannah.
Your daily dose of kindness now. What a way to start a new year. Drain your savings account. But Ethan Simmons is only 9 years old. He didn't spend his $150 life savings on a toy or video game for himself.
I'm donating most of my money from a savings account to a Christian care down at the homeless shelter.
The Rock Island, Illinois boy took his wad of cash to Walmart, went shopping, filling up his cart until it was so heavy he could barely push it.
It feels good. I wish I could have it myself, but I have to think about other people sometimes.
WQAD-TV says he then brought it to the homeless shelter for delivery.
To know that somebody that age is thinking about other people in his community and what they don't have and what he can do for them is pretty awesome.
Nathan's dad admits that at first he wanted to talk his son out of it. That was savings. After all, but then he thought, what kind of a lesson would that be? He was proud of his son for being so selfless.
You did a good thing today, my son. Not many people can say that they emptied their savings account and went shopping for a homeless shelter.
And the donation to the Christian Care Center was extra special for Nathan. His older sister is a Marine. He wanted to make sure that the veterans staying at the shelter were taken care of, too.
Dad must be pretty proud.
Yeah.
Time for our Sports Insider, brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. Now, here he is from that hornet's nest of sports, 710 ESPN, our own Danny O'Neill. You saw the video of Georgia's actual bulldog taking on the Texas Longhorns, actual Longhorn.
Well, I don't know if I'd call it taking on. They threw Uga, who is the bulldog, Uga in a red sweatshirt, swaddled in red, because that's the color. Although apparently people were telling me that actually doesn't enrage bulls, so I've been lied to by cartoons for all these years. But, yeah, and then Bevo, who is a big longhorn steer.
Man, that is one big animal.
Yeah, made a move toward him with the horns. That was terrifying.
Made a move toward him.
Yeah,
how
like
close
lunged.
Did he get?
I don't
not
know. Uga showed good two blitz feet. Recognition. Mm. Really picked up the onrush pretty well and
there's
scampered
no actual,
out of there.
There's no actual contact.
No, they were probably...
It would have been targeting. It would have called
three yards away. But everybody that was around it to photograph it, because, won't this be cute, the bulldog and the steer. They got quite a start.
I like how people are always amazed when animals do animal things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like when a bear kills somebody or when a shark bites somebody, they're like, let's go get the shark! And it's like, the shark's just doing what the shark's doing.
Right, but these are mascots.
But they're
these
still
are
animals.
They should know. They should know better because they're mascots.
I've lived with cats my whole life. They always bite. It doesn't matter how much you think they love
Nobody's
you.
Got a
they're
cat
animals.
As a mascot.
Yeah.
Now, this brings up something that I've thought for a while, that there's been a missed opportunity. What if you could train your mascot? Say, I don't know, a hawk that flies out before the game.
Yeah, that'd be
what
cool.
If you could train him to go after one of the opposing players, like a specific opposing player? Before the game, and then afterwards, like when he attacks him and, like, I don't know, clomps onto the quarterback's arm, you're like, sorry, man, it's
sorry,
a wild animal. Our bad. Like, we won't do that again.
That's actually very clever.
I think they'd catch on to that.
Well, no, if you just did it once, you could only do it once.
Right.
Because then you wouldn't be able to have the mascot anymore.
That's James Paxton.
Yeah, but Paxton. Now, yeah. Paxton, you want to talk about composure in the pocket. He had a bald eagle land on him. Made me think those Canadians are a little more wily than I suspected.
Yeah, they might have been up to something.
Yeah.
Well, we have a very important game coming up. It only has to happen one time. So
it's exactly right. You're like, oh, sorry, man. It's a wild animal.
Aren't certain animals more trainable than others, though?
Yeah, probably.
Like a hawk is probably more trainable than a steer.
Yeah, probably. I don't know how many steers you can train.
But given that you're exquisitely sensitive when it comes to animal rights, what do you think about PETA saying that it's time to end the use of live mascots because of this sort of confrontation?
Well, I don't think that confrontation is the reason to end it. I guess it depends on how you feel about domesticating. There are people who are furious that I have a dog and live in a loft. They think that it's unfair to the dog because there's not a yard for the dog to run around in. I can tell you that the dog has a significantly better life with me than the dog did when it was living in a kennel in chain link in Korea. But that won't tend to matter. So, yeah, there are some people that would believe. Look, they can have that opinion. I don't think any animal mascot has a bad life. I don't think we have any foie gras situations or this is somebody's being force fed. Like, I think every mascot of a team has got a pretty good life.
Do you think circuses are okay then?
Well,
that's different.
Yeah.
You can't compare circuses to the life husky at UW.
It depends on how they treat them. It depends.
Historically, we've shown that circuses don't treat animals
well. Back in the old days, but the modern day circuses.
Yeah, what if we have a modern compassionate circus? Yeah,
no circus has any sort of a free range wildlife preserve that the animals live on until they perform.
He's got his dog in
a loft. They're put in cages. They're shipped to the next location. It's not a life.
How
for
about
an
zoos? Should we get rid of zoos then too?
I'm very conflicted about zoos.
I know.
Oh, I'm so, and my daughter loves it.
Right,
kids, and I always feel conflicted because they just sit there and they look so bored. And I know the zookeepers love them. But
I read a book. It's called by Michael Branch. It's actually very interesting. He's written a series of books. He lives in the high desert in Nevada, and he's an environmentalist. He lives in as small a carbon footprint as he is his family can produce. And he suggested the idea that we go back, because there's some people that want to return North America to the time when Columbus arrived, like to restore it. And he said, we're not being aggressive enough. We need to go back further. And I can't remember which period it was, but we need to restore, like, before any humankind, when you had woolly mammoths and all of these things. And he said that the hidden bonus is that, well, if you had all these wild animals, you would have occasional wild animal attacks.
Exactly.
And he's like, that would introduce some uncertainty into our lives. Like if you had to
spice it up a bit,
if you had to keep on your heads and toes to prevent from being, I don't know, devoured by a jaguar that's as fast as a deer. Yeah. Like it would introduce some of that.
Well, if the shutdown continues long enough, we could reach that.
So that's true.
In the meantime, this being a sports segment, we should at least talk about Nelson Cruz being gone.
Yeah, too bad. This is the tough part of rebuilding. The easy part is when you trade your established stars that were pretty good but hadn't gotten you over the top for new future stars. When you just wave goodbye as Nelson Cruz, who's been as good as anybody in the league over the past 4 years and has been that rarest of things, a free agent by in his 30s who got better. It's tough. It stinks. I wish him the best. He was an awesome player for the Mariners.
Yeah. Daniel, thank you. You got to go. Your dog is calling. He's feeling lonely.
Yeah.
Our Sports Insider brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealer. Is that how your dog sounds?
No, uh-huh. I was just going to realize that I needed to make a different animal sound, because what about the goats, Dave?
No. Choke points.
Let's go.
Brought to you by Online Trading Academy. We're still counting down to the big 3-week closure of Highway 99 where they connect up the new tunnel. And it's not just ordinary drivers being affected. It is thousands of truckers who have to get to and from the Port of Seattle. Chris, how are they going to do it?
Well, they're going to have to fight like the rest of us with extra congestion. We have a lot of truck drivers that listen to Seattle's Morning News and actually to Cairo Radio throughout the day. And so they've been hitting me up over the last couple of weeks, wondering if the Port of Seattle is actually going to be doing anything different to ease their in and out there at the Port of Seattle. Well, and most of them don't use the Alaskan Way Viaduct to get in and out of the port. They're worried about the congestion on the routes that they do use, like East Marginal Way, I-5, and I-90, because of all of us having to go somewhere different than using 99 through downtown Seattle. The Port of Seattle's Peter McGraw says that it's been warning truck drivers on both sides of the mountains since August about this 3-week closure. His best advice?
Urging them to stay in touch with their dispatchers, watch for traffic reports, and for them to determine their best route. But coming in from the south, coming up East Marginal Way is an option. And then there may be times where it's clear and they can take I-90 clear through Atlantic and right to the entrance of T-46.
Terminal 46 is the closest terminal to this closure. It runs along Highway 99 just south of the stadiums. Thousands of trucks use it and all the other terminals. And for those coming from the east side of the mountains, McGraw has this suggestion.
Truckers from eastern Washington can use 405 South to come up from Tukwila, or they can take I-5 South and exit Michigan Avenue and then start lining up south of Terminal 46. That's our one terminal that's going to be most impacted by this.
And to make sure that all those queuing trucks don't block cars along East Marginal Way, which is going to be a lifeline for a lot of drivers, drivers during this 3 weeks. McGraw says the port's going to be opening T-46 about 3 hours earlier each day.
Terminal 46 will have earlier gate hours starting at 5 a.m. And also the Little H flyover there will be available for general traffic as well for people moving out of downtown that want to start moving south on East Marginal Way.
And if you are not familiar with the Little H flyover ramp, that's the pet name they use for it. It is the access to East Marginal Way that you use going west away from the stadium. So if you're there and you're taking Atlantic, and you're used to taking the ramp onto northbound 99 there, you would take a right. Well, if you keep going straight on Atlantic, about another 50, 60 yards away, there's a ramp that goes up and over the railroad tracks and directly accesses East Marginal Way in the southbound direction. That is always open to drivers, and a lot of people don't use that. They may not be realize that since there's so much truck traffic going on that it can be backed up a lot of times.
But if you want to go northbound, how does going southbound help?
Well, I'm just saying, if it's just an option for people who are trying to get out of town to the south, that's an option that you may not consider or may not even know is open to you if you're used to just peeling off and taking 99. So,
is there a sign that says trucks only?
No, it's people are just used to seeing all the trucks. So I think people shy away from it because they might think it's only trucks that can use it, but you can't. It's open to everybody all the time, so that's something that you should think about. The key to this whole thing is going to be flexibility and adaptability.
We don't know what this will look like, and as we get further into the closure, we will be assessing what's working, what isn't, and we will modify plans as necessary.
And don't forget, we keep using January 11th as the day the viaduct is closing, which is true, next Friday night. Tomorrow, we are actually going to lose the ramps at the stadiums. That's something that they start talking about in November, that in order to get a little extra work done, we're losing the on-ramp to northbound at Royal Brougham and the southbound, northbound at Atlantic and southbound at Royal Brougham. We're losing those ramps starting tomorrow.
To 99,
starting tomorrow. Those are going to be out of commission starting tomorrow night. Until we tie
and the same thing coming southbound?
Yes, both the north and southbound stadium ramps there at that you're used to using.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That's my getaway from Seattle Center after the opera.
Yeah, so well, do you have the opera coming up next week?
I think so.
Well, just remember, because you would use it, get off there at Atlantic, and then pop right up and go on I-90, right, home.
Exactly.
So, those close tomorrow night. I'm not sure a lot of people, we've been telling people about that off and on, just a reminder, it actually starts tomorrow with those ramps and then the real deal there on the 11th.
But then after that, I just go down Mercer Street and hop into the tunnel, right?
That is correct, and get off right there at a new Atlantic Street interchange and do the exact same thing. There's a bunch of new intersections that are going to be created when they're tied in right there around the stadiums. Go to mynorthwest.com. We put up the WashDOT videos that kind of show you what's opening up and what's not through that area. Like through those areas, there's some real new intersections there by Atlantic that you can use to get in and around to Alaska.
Well, that should take some pressure off Mercer then, right?
It should. It should. And they're also, Harrison is now going to be open on the north end there at South Lake Union for you to get up and over the top to join 99 and to do things there too. So there's going to be some open opportunities around Harrison at the north end too. So there's a lot for you to learn. And I would recommend checking out these videos at mynorthwest.com to get a really good idea of what's going on besides that 2 miles in the middle, which is the tunnel.
The Northwest has become such a mecca for convention business that there is now going to be a convention of conventions. Here's Dyer Oxley, award-winning host of Northwest Nerd.
Surprisingly enough, for most people, the Northwest is one of the leading areas for geek and nerd culture and conventions anywhere in the United States.
This is Brian Morris, CEO of Renton City Comic-Con, or RenCon.
There are just gobs and tons of these cons that happen all year long, and a lot of them people don't even realize that they're happening.
All of these events, Comic-Cons, and other activity adds up to what some of us nerds call the geek-conomy. It's this loose subculture of local vendors, artists, fan meetups, or contracted gigs like getting hired to make someone's cosplay. It all comes together at pop culture and science-oriented events like Comic-Cons, from Ellensburg to Seattle, Bellingham to Spokane, and everywhere in between. And with so many, RenCon organizers got to thinking that maybe there's a need for them to network. So now, if there is one place where this Geekonomy is on display. It's in Renton on January 19th at Kickoff the Cons. That's right, it's a convention for conventions.
Kickoff the Cons is an annual event that Renton City Comic Con puts on that invites other cons in the region to come show off their stuff for the public.
Kickoff the Cons is basically a mini Comic-Con unto itself. You got the vendors, some esports activities, demonstrations that usually draw fans to larger events, but also a collection of the region's event organizers.
Jet City Comic-Con, Geek Girl, some of the cons that are coming you don't normally think of as geek cons, like a Ren Fair, Toy and Geek Festivals. There might be some little odd cons that you're like, wow, I didn't even know that existed.
Perhaps you're more into horror movies and the macabre. There's a con for that. It's called Crypticon. You don't want to venture south of Snohomish County for a pop culture fix? Well, there's a con for that. It's called Nerd Fair. Or are you a bookworm who specializes in sci-fi and fantasy? Well, you got NorwezCon for that. You get the idea.
We believe that in this area of the world, in the Northwest, that as all cons succeed, that individual cons can succeed, and that we can encourage and support and build each other up so that we're not just a bunch of little individual cons or even individual big ones, but that we're all working to the same goals of building up and supporting the geek and nerd culture here in the Northwest.
So, Dyer, let me get this straight. Because of social media, it has now built up a demand for in-person interaction.
I would say that would be one way to put it. But I wouldn't necessarily put it that way. This stuff has been happening for years and years here, and people just haven't noticed. NorwezCon is in its 42nd year now. RadCon is a few decades old. The only thing I can liken this to was in the 80s and 90s when this region had an underground music scene that folks kind of knew was happening but didn't really know until it exploded. Well, now geek culture has now invaded pop culture and is our pop culture. These things are just so much more prominent that I just thought it was quite surprising that we now have a con for all these conventions to get together and their fans. This is for the public as well.
And geek used to be kind of a slur, but it sounds like it's been reclaimed. How would you describe geek culture now?
It's kind of, it actually has gotten a little bit difficult because a lot of people will say, oh, I'm not a nerd. I wouldn't go to Comic-Con. And the best way I've heard this kind of described is that you're saying you're not a nerd, you're not into this stuff, but you're also wearing head-to-toe Seahawks gear, right?
So you
are
would
a
that
sports
convention be called?
Nerd. Yeah, but even our sports figures, I interviewed Cassius March for this podcast to do called NW Nerd, and he's huge into magic. You know,
and tattoos,
MagicCon,
and tattoos. Yeah, well, that and you know these. This I gotta admit, I am one of these folks that have kind of been a proponent of this word geekonomy because at the podcast we were just trying to figure out what is a term we can describe this thing that we're reporting on, and that's just been the best term. But you have Mock's Boarding House in Bellevue in Ballard here that now, if you're a board gamer or want to do a magic tournament, that is one of the most successful pubs and cafes in this region. You've got vendors that go to these events. One of my favorite is called Granny Gone Geek. She is a grandmother who does needlepoint. And I have a few framed needlepoint things that she does of this show we both love called Supernatural and Star Trek. There is a Geek Craft Expo that does a holiday market here in Seattle that if you need a cooking mitt that is in the shape of Thanos' glove, you know, you will find that there.
You will find Dyer at the Northwest Nerd Podcast at MindNorthwest.com. Thank you, Dyer Oxley.
Thank you.